Hello everyone, I'm Bhikkhu Dhammananda, I'm a Buddhist monk, and today I want to give a talk about the Four Noble Truths, the perhaps most fundamental of Buddhist teachings, and in which the Buddha sometimes declared are like an elephant footprint into which all other footprints fit in. So all of Buddhist teachings fit into the scheme of the Four Noble Truths. But for those who are afraid of big numbers, maybe the good news is that sometimes the Four Noble Truths have been simplified into just two truths: suffering and the ending of suffering. But in this talk, I want to go with a longer scheme. So maybe I first give a brief overview over the Four Noble Truths, and then I will try to explain them in greater detail. So the first Noble Truth is the same. That is the Noble Truth of suffering. But maybe the first thing to understand about this is that actually the original Pali word dukkha does not just mean suffering. It actually means the whole spectrum from coarse, tangible suffering up to the most subtle imperfections. So the Pali word dukkha, which was the original word the Buddha used, actually has a much broader spectrum, a much broader meaning. So this is important to understand. Then, what are the Four Noble Truths? So the first Noble Truth is about the fact that life is full of suffering and imperfections. So the Buddha declared that the perhaps most fundamental fact to realize, to make any progress on a spiritual path, to start off even on a spiritual path, is to realize that the world is full of imperfections, and the world is full of suffering, and people are full of suffering. So this is the first basic level of understanding that gives us a basic level of sanity. Because it's not anymore about my suffering. The suffering is something universal. Everyone has some degree of suffering. People have different sufferings, and everyone encounters many imperfections every day, both within and without. Then the second Noble Truth states that there is an origin of suffering or imperfection. And that origin has been formalized by the Buddha into a chain of 12 links. The famous law of dependent origination. So it is not just one cause, one origin of suffering, but there is a chain of causal links. And along this chain, the suffering grows and becomes more, as we can say, more far-reaching. Then the third Noble Truth is the good news, the fact that there is a possibility of transcending all suffering and all imperfection. So sometimes Buddhism has been accused of being pessimistic, but that is usually by people who forget that there are two more truths to the Four Noble Truths. So the third Noble Truth states it is possible to transcend suffering and to overcome all imperfections. And the fourth Noble Truth is a path to get there. It's a Noble Eightfold Path, a path of eight factors that lead to transcendence of suffering and imperfection. So this just as a brief overview. Now let us go more into the details of what each truth implies. So maybe a good starting point to start with the first noble truth might be the beginning of life. You might not remember, but your mother almost certainly will. The fact that birth is suffering. Your birth was suffering, both for yourself and for your mother. So it starts right at the beginning. And then it continues. Then you have to learn to adopt to this body. You have to get used to this body. You have to get used to eating. You have to get used to the toilet. You have to get used to the environment that you are in, to the various noises in your environment. You have to get used to the people that you will deal with every day. And usually we forget that, but this is all work. And it all implies exertion, and it's not fun for a baby to do all this. And then slowly you have to learn to walk, you have to learn to talk. And this is all involves some degree of suffering. Then at some point you have to go to school. And many of us remember that school is not always just fun. So you have to learn to deal with the people in your school class. You have to solve different tasks. You have to get assignments, and you have to solve assignments. And you have to deal with the teachers and so on. So this all involves quite some degree of suffering. And then slowly further in your life moves further on, you get into poverty, and this is not fun for most people. The teenager age, it's, at least for me, there's a lot of suffering. So there you again have to deal with many things which require exertion and which are very often very painful. And further on, maybe you go to university, or you directly have to earn a living. And earning a living also is not fun. You have to deal with your boss, or you have to deal with competitors, and you have to keep up with your profession. So this is all not easy, and it involves quite some amount of exertion. And then somewhere around that time, maybe you have to get, you feel you have to get a girlfriend or a boyfriend, and later you maybe have to get married. And then you have to get kids, and all this involves effort, it involves struggle, it involves painful experiences. So this is all included in the noble truth of suffering. Then further, the older that you get, the more often you usually get sick. So some people are sick from the very beginning, almost all the time. So this is suffering. And then slowly you get old, and old age is full of suffering. Old age, your body doesn't have that much vitality anymore, so it's difficult to move your body. And it's difficult to remember things, and slowly the burden of your body becomes more and more evident. And at some point then you have to die. So and this is all included in the noble truth of suffering. But now, this is in a sense mostly only the outer part, now, the external part. Then, apart from this kind of material aspect of life, you also have a mind, and that mind often gets in the way. So many times maybe you think you could manage, you know, to do your work and to learn what you have to learn in school and so on, if not your mind would all the time get into the way. Yeah, so you have some task at hand and it might not even appear so difficult, but then all these feelings arise in you and you start to think about what other people have done to you or what you have done, and slowly you might realize that your mind is itself a condition of much suffering. It is, mind itself is suffering in a sense. So both body and mind are suffering, are all included in the noble truth of suffering. Body, mind, feeling, your consciousness, you try to direct your consciousness on whatever you think is important, and then you realize you have very little control over your consciousness and over your attention, and that why even consciousness can be said to be suffering. So, but then all these have an origin. There's a reason for this, and there's a reason for all this suffering. And in Buddhism, the first cause is not God. The first cause of all this is our own spiritual blindness, our spiritual ignorance, our lack of understanding existence. And that is why Buddhists usually don't try to get to heaven, but try to get enlightened. So ignorance, spiritual darkness, lack of understanding existence, these are the first cause of all suffering. And based on this, every moment we have these thoughts and emotions and feelings bubble up in ourselves. And these are usually called mental formations or karmic formations. So these thoughts and emotions and so on, what we in modern times might call unconscious processes, including habits that push and pull you around, and instinctual impulses, these all arise from ignorance and spiritual blindness, and these are the second link in the chain. So, and based on these unconscious processes, based on these unconscious thoughts, based on these impulses from within, our consciousness arises. In Buddhism, consciousness always arises in relation to something. So it's not just a blank slate. We perceive in accordance with our karma, we perceive in accordance with who we are. So, and who we are, the deepest part of who we are can be said, unconscious processes. So, and based on these unconscious processes, our personality forms. And based on our personality will be the world that we perceive around us, in the sense that we perceive only that part of reality which corresponds with our own personality, we can say. So there's a whole world around us, but we always only perceive a small portion of that world that corresponds to our own inner inclinations. And based on this, we begin to think. So we form intentions, and we form ideas of the world based on our own individuality, based on our own individual inclinations. So, and based on that, we have developed senses somewhere in the past, in order to perceive more properly that portion of the world that we are inclined to perceive. For that we have the senses. So, and once we have senses that perceive an external world, we all the time are also hit by that world in a sense. The outside world all the time impresses itself onto us. And based on these impressions that arise from this contact between the outside world and our senses, different feelings arise. Sometimes pleasant feelings arise, sometimes unpleasant feelings arise, and sometimes neutral feelings arise. So, and when we experience pleasant feelings, then we want more of that. And whenever we experience unpleasant feelings, then we want to get away from these. So, and based on this, desire arises. Thirst for more arises. Thirst of more for more pleasure arises, and a desire to always get away from unpleasant experiences arises. And based on these, we develop again deeper habits, deeper cravings, deeper attachments, both to the world around us as well as to our habits, to our mental preconceptions, our sense of who we are. So, and based on this, there develops a stream of becoming. We become. This is all not just linear happening, because these tendencies were there basically at the beginning. This is what we talked about as mental formations or karmic formations. They are again fed by the things of the senses and by the feelings that we experience and by the desires we have in response to different feelings. So this is a whole cycle, this whole bundle of how things condition us and how this process of origination of suffering continues. So, and this all strengthens again our sense of who we are, based on our attachments, based on our habits, and so on. We become more and more something. And this is what, in the end, when our body dies, this will not die. This accumulates a certain amount of energy within ourselves. And this energy will seek always some new base. So even when we die, this energy will find another body. This energy will find an appropriate place to start off again. So, and this is a further reaching effect that often is not talked about in Western Buddhism. It's not just the tangible and core suffering that we experience throughout our life, but even the fact of rebirth is full of dangers and full of potential sufferings. So, because once we are born, we have to start again, and there's a whole process of accumulating more and more suffering and imperfections continues. So, and this is a chain of becoming, the chain of the origination of further and further suffering and imperfection. But as I stated before, there's also a light. There's also the possibility of transcending all that. And this is the third noble truth. The mere fact that there is a possibility of transcendence, there's a possibility of going beyond all suffering. And the path thereto is a Noble Eightfold Path, which is the fourth noble truth. So the Noble Eightfold Path starts with a noble perspective. But in the first instance, we again have to realize now when I say the Noble Eightfold Path starts with noble perspective, it does not mean that this is the first point and all the other points follow. There is a sense of sequentialness. So we can think of the Noble Eightfold Path as a sequence, but many times different factors of the Noble Eightfold Path will be present simultaneously or have to be present simultaneously. And it's not that the first we develop the first factors of the Noble Eightfold Path and then the second and third and so on, but sometimes we might start off somewhere in the middle, or maybe based on the second factor we develop the first factor and so on. So but let me first go into the details of these factors. So first we have the right perspective or noble perspective. And now what this constitutes actually is a three truths that we have talked about before. So an understanding that life is full of suffering and imperfection is part of a noble perspective. An understanding that there's an origin to suffering and imperfection is part of a noble perspective. And an understanding that these can be transcended is part of a noble perspective. So now the first noble truths are included in a sense in the fourth noble truth. Now, a realization of the first three noble truths constitutes the first factor in a way of the Noble Eightfold Path. So and then based on right perspective, now we develop right thinking. When we have a right perspective in life, or a noble perspective in life, I prefer actually the word noble. So now when we have a noble perspective in life, then we begin to think more nobly. So we begin to think more about how we can do good in the world, how we can help, how we can benefit others, and how we can make the best of our own lives. So. But as I stated before, now of course, proper thinking and noble thinking equally conditions our noble perspective. Then, based on a noble perspective, based on more noble thoughts, we begin to speak better. Now we begin to speak more nobly. Now we begin to speak more compassionately. When we talk with people, we begin to speak with greater depth and wisdom, and we speak in a manner that is both beneficial for us and for others. And based on this, or parallel with this, we also develop a more noble way of acting. Now we begin to act more compassionately, we begin to act in a way that is beneficial both for us and for other people and for other beings. So, and this includes also mental action. So it does not necessarily mean only helping others and only doing like physical work. Even when we learn something that is likely to make us a better person or a more useful person, that this is included in right action. So, and based on right action and based on right speech, we cultivate more noble ways of living, a more noble way of livelihood. So gradually we will try to see to it that we don't earn a living in a manner that harms other people, such as through killing living beings or selling weapons, selling drugs, cheating people, and so on. These are all ignoble ways of making a living. So, and these are all ways that we naturally will abandon and leave behind us when we progress on the Noble Eightfold Path. So, and based on these, and parallel with these, we begin to look more often on our mind, or look more often into our mind. And there we start to cultivate four right efforts. So the first right effort, or the first noble effort, is an effort to remove all unwholesome ways of thinking from our mind. And whenever unwholesome thoughts arise, we try to remove them. And in general, we try to make sure that unwholesome thoughts arise less and less in the first place. And then based on this, we try to see to it that we more often invite wholesome thoughts into our mind and wholesome states of mind into our mind. And when we have invited some wholesome states into our mind, that we try to maintain that, and that we try to make sure that wholesome mind states remain longer and longer within ourselves. So, and based on this, we develop clarity of mind, what is usually called mindfulness, a word that I sometimes don't like so much. So I think the word clarity is a good word. In the past, sometimes the word self-remembering has been used by some people, which is also quite good. So it's about developing clarity about who we are and our present experience. So we develop an understanding how our body feels, how our body is positioned in life. We develop an understanding of how we feel at the present moment, because this will also condition how clear our mind will be and how we interact with the world around us. Then we develop an understanding of how what our mental states are. Do I feel happy or unhappy? Do I feel concentrated or do I feel muddle-minded? And so on. As well as the fourth, there are usually, the Buddha used to talk about the four ways of clearing the mind, or four conditions that we should develop clarity about. So the first one is the body, the second one is feeling, the third one are mind states, and the fourth one is dhammas. So on the last one means we relate what we are experiencing to this noble task of becoming enlightened and of becoming a more noble person. So we don't just note that now I'm angry or now I'm greedy, but we understand whether something is a hindrance on the spiritual path or whether something is a factor of the spiritual path. And so we have some value judgment also about what we are experiencing and how it relates to our goal of becoming a more noble person and our goal of transcending suffering and imperfection. And based on that, we can develop the last factor of the Eightfold Path, which is right samadhi. Now we develop meditation. We develop our mind. We develop the states of greater calm, greater experience of enlightenment, expanded states of consciousness. Now these are part and parcel of the Noble Eightfold Path. So, and in order to understand this factor properly, I usually prefer to think about a simplified version of the five jhana factors. So now when we become clear and we have our intentions, and then if we sit down to meditate, now we usually choose some subject that we meditate on. It can be just a Dhamma topic, certain topics that we have learned that we believe help us on the path to enlightenment, but it can also be the desire to become more in tune with our breathing or with the elements both within ourselves and the elements of the world. It can be a desire to be more close with the devas. Some people might be surprised, but actually in Buddhism there is also encouraged to meditate on the good qualities of the angels and the higher beings. So these are all valid ways of meditating. These are all valid ways of beginning to direct our mind towards the loftier things of life and towards transcendence. So, and whenever we apply our mind to certain topics, as well as, for example, to our breathing, then we develop the jhana factor or the samadhi factor of mental application, which is the first factor of samadhi. Then we are able to sustain something, whenever we are able to sustain our meditation and our experience of the breath, or we feel we have some closer connection with the Dhamma or higher beings, we are able to sustain in our mind this perception that we are on this path of building up a connection there. So this will be called sustainment of mind or sustainment of meditation. Then when based on that, sometimes we experience greater joy in ourselves, and we sometimes might experience certain signs of meditation, and we might have certain experiences of light or of greater pleasure of the body, we might feel very light and so on. These are all included in the third factor of samadhi, which is joy, curiosity, exaltation, these kind of things, which naturally arise from sustainment of meditation. And when that becomes a little bit more balanced, and we begin to feel less exalted but more stable, we begin to feel kind of more enlightened in a sense, more like floating above the world, then this is the fourth jhana factor, the fourth factor of samadhi, which then gives way to oneness of mind. And with this oneness of mind, we then might develop enlightened wisdom and enlightened experiences. This oneness of mind is what we can use for directing our mind to becoming enlightened, to finding the right answers in life, to finding the right kind of things to know about in life, or about ourselves. Now, for some, this might include perceiving their past lives. For others, it might not. So, this oneness of mind then can be used in various ways in order to make progress on the path to enlightenment, further progress. So now, sometimes these 8 factors are extended to 10 factors, which then include right knowledge and right liberation, or knowledge and liberation. So based on this oneness of mind and based on the factor of noble samadhi, noble meditation, we develop certain knowledge of how things are and how existence works and so on, and who we are in a sense. So, and this will lead us onwards towards liberation and transcendence. So, and yeah, this might be actually enough for today. Just a brief overview over the Four Noble Truths, the suffering and the ending of suffering, suffering, the origin of suffering, the cessation of suffering, or the transcendence of suffering and imperfection, and the path to the transcendence of suffering and imperfection. So I hope that some people found it useful. And Namo Buddhaya.